This is Beyond the Showroom, where you'll learn tips and techniques on the car buying process, how to get the best deal, what scams to watch out for, and much more. Here's your host and one of the foremost automotive business experts in the country, the Chevy Dude, Mike Davenport.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Beyond the Showroom podcast. I am Mike Davenport, joined by my lovely wife, Andy.
How are you doing today? I'm good.
Good. Glad to hear that. So tonight's subject, I'm really excited about this episode. This is our fourth episode, and we're going to be talking about many things in relationships to buying cars out of state. We were talking before here that... You buy all your cars out of state.
I do.
Even though you've never bought a car. You make me buy them out of state.
Exactly.
Since we live in Indiana and the dealership's in Kentucky. So I have clients in all 50 states. Can you believe that? I talked to my 50th state customer the other day. Yesterday, I think he texted me.
And what state was that?
You don't remember?
No, I'm asking to see if you remember.
It's the biggest little estate in the country.
Okay.
Delaware.
And... It was all about whether or not you remember.
I remember.
Because I pretty much can tell you who the customer was.
Oh, Kenya. What's his first name?
Richard.
Yes. Very good. I like that.
So I'm really good with all that stuff.
So yeah, if you guys don't know, Mrs. Chevy Dude follows up with most of my clients. And she's the one who sends emails and birthday cards and stuff like that. And
I do all the dirty work.
Do all the work that I think is important to... have consistent follow-up and, you know, to be there for the customer and the fact that they need help or whatever the case may be. I talk to people all the time, and I want to continue to talk to people all the time after they buy a car. Most salespeople are forgotten just a couple days later sometimes, but certainly within 6 months.
I've been trying to forget you for 20 years. It's not working.
Last week.
And you are my worst salesman ever.
Did somebody say last week that you're going to leave me or something?
Oh, yeah. I saw that comment. Yeah. Somebody commented about, oh, she's going to be leaving soon.
It's like, yeah, we were joking around we've been together for 26 years and we've been through all the hard lives, right? We've been through the kids.
Three kids.
Yeah. No, having no money, you know, and all that stuff. And now we got the kids are all grown up. We're trying to get rid of them. Yeah, trying to get rid of them. Middle daughter's out. Our son is working on becoming a police officer with a big metropolitan area, and he's in the final stages of that. So we're hoping he gets that job, and it's gonna be exciting. So so with having customers in all 50 states, a big routine question that people call me and ask me is what is it like buying a car from out of state? Is there advantages? Is there disadvantages? You know, all that stuff. So I think that makes a great topic for our fourth episode of Beyond the Showroom podcast. I can't believe we already have four episodes in.
Yeah, that is quite surprising, and that people actually listen.
Yeah, the podcasting stuff is doing good. I've got really good downloads on the podcasting software. Watching the analytics, we've been having like 5,000 and 6,000 people on the live stream on the night. So that's really awesome. So it's really exciting to see all of this stuff coming together. It's really, really fun. And we're really beginning to enjoy it. It's really, really awesome. And I think it's only going to help everything down the road to make this a lot better. So you can text in your topic related comment. We got to mention topic related questions. I said the wrong. So you can text in your topic related questions to 502-909-5192. We have to stress topic related questions. We have to stay on topic for the audio portion of the podcast. And as you know, we're live every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then the next morning at 6 a.m. Wednesday, it's live on the podcasting platform. So if you want to join us live on YouTube, feel free to look up Chevy Dude, hit the subscribe button, turn the YouTube notifications on. And that way, you know, when we go live and maybe what the topic is early in the day. So a couple of things that we're going to talk about in tonight's podcast is we're going to talk about pricing on a new car state to state. You could see a big difference on state to state pricing. So as you guys know, we have talked about how to make sure we're getting the right price. We're talking about how to make sure that the pricing is accurate that you're looking at in the past podcast. So it's most important to understand the pricing from state to state, because it does matter from all of the states there and whatnot. Also, sales tax. A lot of people ask about sales tax. How is sales tax handled since I'm in Oregon? Well, we won't say Oregon because they don't have sales tax. I'm in California and you're in Kentucky. And this is going to be relevant to anybody in any state buying. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be for me. Again, we don't do these podcasts to promote me for selling cars. I'm doing these podcasts to promote good car buying tip. Good car buying tips, car buying techniques to make sure that you get the absolute best deals when you are out shopping for a car. So if you're in Florida and you're buying a dealer car in Michigan or California to New York or whatever in between, that's what we're going to talk about. How the paperwork is handled. That's an important thing. There's always transactional paperwork. How your trade-in's handled, that's always a big question. And then how to take delivery of your new car. There's a couple of different ways. There might be some fees involved, stuff like that. So it's a good topic. Good topic. You got any questions to start out with?
There's just a few questions. I know we're going to hit on some stuff, but Andrew, at least I assume it's Andrew. Asked about a Montana LLC to save sales tax money.
We could talk about that. Let me write that down. See if we have time to talk about that tonight. I looked into doing the Montana LLC because there is some tax advantage there. It's kind of difficult at the same time, but there's some tax advantages there. So the here we go. Sorry.
Make sure you're talking into the microphone.
Yep, I am. So let's talk about the most important one. This is the big one. Pricing of a new car from state to state. This is extremely important because there's regions, and I'm led to believe that every manufacturer has their own little regions, and every region has a different market. You could have a subprime market. You could have a prime market. You could have all sorts of things going on in different areas of the country. So the manufacturers do have different rebates depending on where you are going to title the vehicle. And I think that's the important part of it, is where you are going to title the vehicle. It doesn't matter where you buy it. It's a matter of where you title it. So again, because you're in California, which is, I guess, West region. I don't even know for GM. Like, I've never really paid attention. So, and I know you probably don't know the regions, right?
No. I don't pay attention to that stuff.
So Louisville is in the Southeast region. If you go to like Indianapolis and Detroit, you're in the North Central region, and the North Central region typically does have some little bit more aggressive incentives than other regions, because that's where all the factory workers are. That's where Detroit is, all that good stuff. And sometimes you could be dealing with a dealership that might be in the Southeast region, but you live in the Northeast region and it's only a few miles apart. There's all sorts of boundaries like that throughout the country. And I've shared these regions in the past, and if you Google it, you can find stuff like that. But we have different pricing structures and different rebates incentives out there with different regions. So maybe the North Central region, which is Detroit, they have more Chevy buyers, right? They have more GMC buyers, Cadillac, Buick.
So they would have more like leasing.
They do have probably, more leasing, yes. Much more leasing.
Because of all the plant workers.
Yep, absolutely. So with that being said, they may have like a loyalty rebate, right? So, so if you own a GM vehicle, typically right now, I think it is 2006 or newer. It used to be 1999. 1999 was forever, and they just recently changed it last year. So if you have a certain model year or newer General Motors vehicle, they give you a rebate. Well, down here in Louisville, we're in the Southeast region. We have a big Toyota plant. We have a big Ford. We have several Ford plants. We have another Toyota plant on the west side of Indiana. We have Volkswagen plant down in Tennessee. We have all sorts of manufacturers down here. And I think there's a lot of stuff down in Alabama and stuff like that. Georgia for Hyundai, I think. So down here, we have a lot of conquest buyers. We have non-General Motors buyers. So they'll do more of a conquest down here. And that could mean a difference between getting a rebate and not getting a rebate. So there's those different rebates that you got to look for and understand.
The biggest question is, does it matter where you're purchasing or where you live?
It's always where you title.
So if I am titling in Indiana and I am buying from a Fort Wayne dealership.
Yep.
What?
Fort Wayne's in Indiana, just so you know.
What rebate am I going to get?
So let's change that up a little bit. So let's go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, because that's North Central region. And let's use my analogy that where we live in Southern Indiana, we're in North Central region of Fort Wayne, Southeastern region for where we live. So we may get a conquest rebate where they're going to get a loyalty rebate. So that happens throughout the manufacturers all over the place.
But I guess because you're talking about, so Southern Indiana dealers are part of the Southeast region, but I'm going to a dealer in the North and it's still getting titled in Indiana. So which rebate do you qualify for?
It's based off of where you title the vehicle, which would go off of zip code.
So Southeast.
Yes. Region. Correct. It's a good question. I like that. You put
that's
that
up. What I'm
with. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm glad you asked that question because that helps out quite a bit. So, so it's all dependent on the zip code on what you are going to title the vehicle in. So it's really, really important to understand that. And it's really, really important to communicate with your dealership on exactly what to do and let them know where you're titling it. So, we have a Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram store, right? So with Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram store, there is, oh my God, it's so confusing. Like it's so confusing to me when I sell one of these vehicles. There's about a billion questions you got to ask. And I think then you have to get blood samples and hair follicles. And
you have to sign your life away?
Yeah. You have to like jump on one foot and be able to touch your nose. And it's just crazy with Chrysler. So, but with them, like if you're military, if you work for one of like 18,000 businesses in the country or, you know, stuff like that, you own a business or or if you have a truck with three wheels, if you have a truck with four wheels, it's just a lot of goofy stuff. So you got to kind of make sure you can kind of ask that dealership based off of where I live, what kind of incentives are available to me. So that's always really, really important to ask because the incentives do change based off of where you live. And with the pricing that everybody puts on the internet, you want to make sure that you understand that pricing is going to be good for where the dealership is located. So if you're in California and I'm in Kentucky and there's a rebate, you may not qualify for that rebate that we're showing in Kentucky because you got to realize that we are massly people who are hitting our website is in our local area. So does that make sense to you?
Yes. The majority of the people are.
Yeah. Well, I like to ask if it makes sense to you because the reason we are doing this together is because I understand the car business sometimes to a fault that maybe I don't articulate everything correctly and articulate the things where the general consumers don't understand it. So that's exactly what we talked about in episode one is that this is great because you understand the car business, but you also probably are more in tune with the consumer than you are a car dealer.
Yes. And I also know that you and I do not speak the same language hardly ever, but we know how to communicate and figure out what we're trying to say to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You speak a little French. I don't.
Well, parlez-vous français? No.
So, and along with that, it comes with sales tax and DMV fees. So a lot of people think that maybe they're going to get double dipped on taxes. And I can only really talk about the states that I do the most of the business with. That would be Illinois, Ohio, Tennessee, obviously California. Kentucky. Yeah, California. I do a ton of business there, ton of business in Florida, a ton of business in Texas. I do a lot of business in Illinois. Stuff like that. So, the best of my knowledge, none of those states are you're going to get double dipped in. So, what my dealership does as a precaution is we collect all the sales tax for where you're going to title it, and we send it to your state on your behalf. The reason we do that is most people finance cars. So it's our obligation and our duty as a dealership to make sure that that car is out of our name and into the consumer's name properly based off of banks. Now, it doesn't matter if it's your personal bank or it's our bank. The bank is holding us responsible for being paid to do that. So if your ABC credit union is saying, hey, listen, we're going to give you a cashier's check for this car, but you're going to sign, and a lot of times they make you sign a letter that you're going to guarantee title. And if we don't guarantee title, they come after us and they can sue us for the full amount of the car. And they basically would not have the not have to give out the loan proceeds, but the consumer would still have to pay the loan, you know? So dealerships are under a lot of stress and a lot of push from the banks to make sure things are done right. So we take a lot of precautions as a dealership on my level. We take a lot of precautions. So I wanted to show this slide with taxes and fees. So as I said, we will collect taxes and fees based off of where you live. So this is a Tennessee deal that I just did. And unfortunately, the podcast listeners are not going to be able to watch this, but we're at the 15 and a half minute mark of this video. And I've got it up there on the screen that this person is buying a car that's the price is $27,995. They have a trade-in of $10,500. And they have a dock fee of $350. So the with this, oh, actually, this one that says, is the trade-in the same name as the registrant? No. So this one may not matter. I didn't catch that earlier. So you can see on the screen it says fee estimate Tennessee. We have a Clark County fee, we have a registration fee, we have a postage fee, we have a wheel tax fee, we have a title fee. Those are all fees that the DMV is charging for whatever reason. So when you go into the DMV, they may just say, hey, your fees are $102.50, but they don't itemize out what it is. The system that I use for 100% of my deals out of state are itemizing out like this. And I'll be more than happy to always kind of show this to a client of mine so that they understand what they know, because I don't want you to pay fees two times. I want you to pay once. I don't want you to pay any, but unfortunately we can't get around that. And then down below, it shows sales tax of Davidson County of 7% at $1,984.15. And it looks like there's a couple little local and state article sales tax of $36.40. And there's some type of collection of sales tax fee for a dollar. So your total of $2,065. And at the bottom of that, it's a total of $2,167.65. So we use this program to ensure that we collect all the sales tax. So what I tell my clients, and this is where you need to talk to your dealer, is if I'm collecting $2,100 and whatever dollars I just said, all that money is going to go to the DMV, or you're going to get credit for that. There are reciprocal states. So in Indiana, we have 7% sales tax. Kentucky, we have 6%. We only send 1% of tax to Indiana because Indiana gives credit for the 6%. Therefore, the state of Kentucky keeps 6% and Indiana gets 1%. Does that make sense to you? You're looking at me weird.
Oh, I'm just thinking all those times that Indiana state tax return asks, have you bought out of state and not claim this, you know, and wanting to charge you the extra money because you bought somewhere else.
Oh, do they do that? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea. So that kind of maybe enlightens you. So we send all of the money. You get credit for 100% of the money. And with my dealership, if for some reason hey, the DMV says you owe $2,500 and we collected $2,100, you're gonna owe that. But if they say, hey, listen, you're only owing $1,800 and we collected $2,100, you just call me and we write a check back to you. So that's a question you want to make sure you ask the dealers. Like, hey, listen, what's your processes? What's your procedures? What's your policy of collecting sales tax, collecting DMV fees? Can I roll that into my loan? Most people want to put it in their loan, you know? Sad. I don't think it's good in most cases, but most people don't put money down on car loans. They finance 100% or more of the value of the car. So with that being said, you know, you need to ask that question up front. What are you going to do with my taxes and fees? Can I roll those into my loan? So if I pay $1,800 and I get to the DMV and they say it's $2,100, I'll be due that. But what happens if it's vice versa? You collect $2,100, it's $1,800. What happens to that money? Will you give that back to me? You know, and typically that's not going to be an issue. I think most dealers are like, hey, we collected too much. We'll give it back to you. it can happen different, but that's what we're here for. So, and also in this same program that I use, again, up on the screen for the listeners of the podcast, this tells us everything that we need to know and for to collect, so that way we go to the DMV. So my dealership, what we do, because my dealership sells so many cars out of state, and I'm responsible for probably most of those, but we use a third-party company to send everything to the DMV. So in a nutshell, what happens with this third-party company is they make us get all of this stuff, and they tell us what we need up front, so that way we can send it to the DMV and get everything done for you. None of this stuff is really that crazy. It's pretty routine for us. It's not anything out of the ordinary or anything like that. So, but you can see there's a lot of stuff to get to. So I haven't paying attention to the comments. I know Andy pays attention to the comments, but you know, I mentioned that doc fee earlier. I get it. I see the comments on my doc fee video. I know people don't want to pay doc fees, but it is what it is. I just bought a car. Yeah. And I paid doc.
Somebody fee. Just commented about, did your dealership just raise your doc fee?
We did just raise our doc fee. So I've commented that in the past, but I've also commented that we've had the same doc fee for probably 15 years, right? I've been with the dealership for 10. It's always been that way. And for the people who started there in 1999, they said it was pretty much always $200 or $299.50. So we did just raise it $50. Not that big of a deal. It happens. We can't control it. There's nothing I can do about it. And like I said, I literally just bought a car and I'm paying the doc fee myself. So I'm not even immune to that as well. So, and that was one thing I was going to talk about. You know, you got to ask, what's the doc fee? You know, and we're in Indiana, we're taxed on the doc fee, right? So Indiana taxes the doc fee. So we get charged 7% of that $399.50 that we're our $349.50.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So it is what it is. So the next part of the subject, any questions on that? On
well,
those?
Yes, we do have one, and this is always the major one, Illinois.
Yes.
And this was actually a truck driver that was in yesterday. He said he was a truck driver with the truck caps.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he said, I heard some dealers in Illinois can charge both Illinois and your state.
No, I'm glad. That's awesome that he brought that up. So, I met him. He's going up north northwest Indiana after he left our dealership yesterday. So, no, that was a big rumor back in November, December, that you're getting double dipped in Illinois, and that's not the case. So Illinois changed the law, which is not a good law. This is horrible for consumers of Illinois and for residents of Illinois. It's a trash rule. It's a trash law that if you have a trade-in, like I just showed on that screen, you only get sales tax credit for $10,000. So if you have a $20,000 trade-in in most states out there, you don't pay sales tax on $20,000. So if you have a $40,000 car, you have a $20,000 trade-in, you only pay sales tax on $20,000. Well, in Illinois, that's not the case. You only get sales tax credit on $10,000, so you have to pay sales tax on $30,000 rather than $20,000, and that's trash. That you're being double dipped on sales tax. Again, nothing you can do about it. Nothing that we can fight about it. Just have to fight with the legislators. But I think the Illinois New Car and Independent Dealers Association, they're trying to fight it and trying to win. So they're really working hard for the residents of Illinois, which, yeah. Which Illinois, the right one or the left one, the top one or the bottom one. They're really working hard for the residents of Illinois to ensure that they're treated fairly and properly. So right now they're not, but again, it's life. It's beyond our control. There's nothing we can do about it.
Okay. Well, we have one more question regarding sales tax, and this is from Brent. He lives here in Indiana and is looking to buy a truck in Ohio. He wants to know if he can ask the dealer to pay the sales tax.
That would be part of the negotiating. So anytime that I'm negotiating with somebody, they're like, pay the sales tax. You know, it's just negotiating the car deal. So there's not, you know, unless you got it in with the governor of Indiana, which I don't. You know, I'm going to have to pay sales tax. So you're always going to have to pay sales tax. So it's just a matter of negotiating the sales tax out of the deal. So if the dealership says, hey, listen, we'll sell it for $20,000. You got $2,000 in taxes. If you can get to $18,000, that's kind of like the same thing. So it is, again, it is what it is. So let's talk about paperwork. We're going to group this into a couple of things, how paperwork is handled with and at the dealership. So with that being said, it takes a little bit of work to get paperwork done. And there's a few ways to handle this stuff. The car business is behind the times. We're so far behind the times when it comes to this, and it sucks. It makes my life a living hell. It makes it very difficult to do things. What
was that word you used?
So that's a PG word. We can get away
with it. Oh, is it?
So, but the why we can't do things electronically. Why can I not do things electronically in the car business? We have to have multiple pieces of paper. As I'm showing the camera, I got a little bit of ream of paper here. We have to have 15 pieces of paper to sign. Why do I got to have 15 pieces of paper to sign on a car deal? Why can't I just do this electronically? It makes it so simple, but it's not that way at most dealerships. Some of the banking institutions are doing things electronically. So if you go outside the car dealership and get a loan at your credit union, sometimes they'll just email you and they'll do it. So one of the things that I would talk about with a customer when it comes time to trying to earn their financing is, oh, you don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to make two trips. Well, I can't really say that anymore because now it's all done electronically and makes it easy for the customer. So we're so far behind the times on that. So like I said, this is going to group in with the last thing is how to take delivery of your new car, but I'm gonna handle just this little bit here. So handling the paperwork can be done a couple ways. So hopefully down the road we get electronic signatures and we can do electronics. And this is coming from some of the banks, right? So with my clients and my dealership, I will overnight you paperwork and have you sign off on it if you're gonna ship the car. And I'll enclose an envelope and a return label so you can send all the copies back that you signed, and then I'll tear the copies off and put them in the car for you if you're shipping the car. So, or you know, you're coming to the dealership and you do it the old traditional way, but in a nutshell, a little bit of back and forth on mailing. But my dealership, I overnight everything. In some cases, depending on where I'm at with things, on the deal, the day of the week, the month, whatever my pay period, sometimes it comes into play. We get paid on deals from the 1st to the 15th with my dealership. A lot of dealerships are this way. And then 16th through the end of the month. So, if I want to get paid on a deal, I'll be like, hey, let's overnight this. So they get it on Saturday and we get it back on Monday. Right. So we can kind of work that out. So I'll do Saturday delivery on things. It's more expensive for the dealership. It doesn't affect me in any way, but it just gets our deal done quicker, and it helps the customer out too, because if I know that stuff is coming back and I see that the tracking number has been scanned, that all the paperwork's coming back, I've never had an issue. I take that back. I had one mistake and it was not my fault. But we're going to say it this way. I've never had an issue with paperwork being done wrong. One of my business managers forgot to send the bank contract to Mississippi or Alabama to a customer, but luckily we knew him. He's a family member of one of our managers. So we still let somebody take the vehicle. He had a third party picking the vehicle up and taking it down to him. A family member, whatever. I can't talk tonight. So we still let him do it, even though we didn't have a signed bank contract. So, but there's certain circumstance that he was an employee's family, so we let it go. But I've never had that issue. So if I start seeing that that the tracking number has been scanned by UPS, the paperwork's all back. A lot of times customers will drop it off like a UPS store and they'll send me a picture mail of their receipt that they dropped it off.
Yeah. Remember the time that the person at the UPS store actually lost your package?
Oh my God, that was brutal.
And,
sorry about that.
That's why I started laughing when you said I had one mishap. I was like, the person lost your package.
God, I worked hard to find that package too.
And
we were on the phone with UPS and the UPS is like, oh, it just got scanned.
Yeah.
How instantaneous is that?
Because the person finally found where it got hidden.
I think that was Washington State, if I remember right. So
I don't remember,
but I forgot about that. So, but once that's done and we're shipping the vehicle, you know, I'll probably get transport going, because transport takes anywhere from 3 to 5 days to pick up your car. And then depending on where you're going, West Coast, 6-7 days, Florida, 2-3 max. So I try to limit downtime because, anybody who's got a Corvette on order right now, me included, maybe you, I don't know, maybe you are.
No, I'm just waiting for the one in the garage to be mine again.
We kind of want our car now. We're tired of waiting. So
yes, I think everybody's tired of waiting.
It's been an emotional roller coaster for sure for everyone. So, I try to get those logistics going pretty quick. Again, that's each dealership, and if a dealership's not used to shipping cars, then they may have some lag there, but I do it every day, and it makes it a little bit easier. And that's something you can do too, is, you know, communicate with the person is like who there is most often working with customers over the phone. Do you have a salesperson that sells a lot of cars over the internet? Do you have a customer, or do you have a salesperson that deals remotely with customers? You know, you can ask for that person. You have that right to ask for that person. Like, I want to deal with somebody who is very, very in tune with dealing with customers over the internet, and that I'm not going to come in there. You know, stuff like that. So that helps out. That helps you out as well. With that being said, you were going to say something.
I was just wondering if you had gotten done with your rant there. And are going to move on to shipping.
Shipping. Okay. That's what you're here for. You end my rants.
Yes.
I like it.
So move on.
So with the shipping, the shipping is really, really simple. So I'm trying to look at my analytics here. So with the shipping, you know, you can kind of do your shipping on your own. I would never recommend UShip. I know a lot of people say, do UShip. I would never recommend UShip. So we're not going to go into why in this particular podcast. But if you can work with a broker, you can work with a shipper on a routine basis, that would help out. You can work with an independent person, get recommendations from your friends on social media, from Facebook. And then most certainly, I mean, dealerships ship cars every single day. We ship cars from auction. We ship cars throughout. It makes it really, really simple for a dealership to handle it. And that's why I've kind of over the years have kind of handled a lot of the shipping on my own, because I've built some relationships with shippers, big national firms and the local guys, that we make sure that we get things done in a timely fashion. You know, my local guy that lives here in Louisville, he will get something to Texas like tomorrow. You know, he's a beast, right? So, you just got to check on shipping. So typically shipping, and I always ship enclosed. I've shipped a couple open here and there, but my main goal is to ship everything enclosed, because, the risk of having damage happen to the car could be there. Truck drivers lie. Shippers lie. They don't want to take responsibility for it. So I'm not like bashing any driver or anything like that, but it's taking responsibility sometimes is extremely hard to do, especially if there's repercussions from your company, from, you know, your pocketbook, whatever else is out there. So sometimes things happen. So, I think that minimizes the risk on shipping enclosed than open. And there's usually only a couple $100 difference between enclosed and open transport, like sometimes like $300. So it's worth $300 to not have the headaches, not have the issues of having issues with that car getting damaged. And then this time of year, it's winter time, right? So I just had TJ Hunt in the store, and you looked at his Corvette. If you watched that video from Sunday night, you know, you watch that Corvette and it had road salt all over it, had snow all over it. You know, he lives in San Diego. That car's never going to see snow again. So, you know, that's just that too. You know, do you want to get debris and road salt and grime and rain and all that stuff, mud, dirt all over the car too? There's a lot of things happening down the road. So you just never know what's going to happen down there. So it's always good to ship enclosed.
And we did have a question about paying double shipping charges. I assume that's if you trade in and buy a vehicle and are just doing the shipping.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I was going to talk about. So again, it depends. So when you have a trade in, and I always tell my clients that are on the West Coast, you just really need to find somebody who will just buy your car, sell your car, you know, go to a dealer, put it up for private market sale, whatever the case may be. It's tough. It's tough to trade you. And with my dealership, it's tough to trade you in California, Washington State, Oregon, you know, Miami or Arizona, all those places, and ship two shipping costs back and forth. You're going to have two shipping costs back and forth for sure.
Which goes into somebody asked who pays the shipping.
Yeah, customer pays the shipping. Yep. So I wouldn't recommend trying to, you know, hit that with the dealership. That is, you know, that is the dealership's going to say no. I can promise you that. So unless they're really, really desperate to sell a car, which I have had that happen now that I think that out loud, But yeah, the dealership's probably not going to pay for shipping of your car. And if they do pay for shipping in the car, you can guarantee you're going to get the cheapest shipper that they can find. So now that you're putting risk on your car. And yes, that's the driver's responsibility. Yes, that's the shipper's responsibility. But again, do you want to walk down that avenue? So I had a
burden of proof.
Mm-hmm,
because, correct. You know, you never know what they wrote on their slip.
Bill lading, yep.
And could sit there and change it later, yep. Et cetera.
They could, because I have a copy and they have a copy and they're like, "That's it was right there when he signed it, you know," and you may not think, "Hey, Mike, do you have that bill of lading, for the pickup? Do you have a copy of that?" And, you know, you don't think that, right? A lot of times you don't know that shippers give a copy at each destination. So it's kind of tough to know that, especially if you don't do it every day. So there's some things there that you have to watch out for. So like I've had some pretty affluent customers that they're like, I don't care. I had one customer pay almost $4,000 in shipping costs. He paid $4,000 or $2,000 each way of shipping a car. His trade in back, he was in Washington State, north of Seattle. It was a rough place to get to. Actually his ZR1 got shipped up to there before his Z06 came back to me. So I had a little bit of risk that I'm getting a Z06 and I'm praying to God that it's in the condition that he's saying. So, but that's just the way it happens sometimes. So yeah, for the trade-in, if you're really far away from the dealership, there's a couple different things. Sell it on your own, get it to the dealership at your cost, drive it to the dealership, stuff like that. Like with my regional guy, you know, since we're in Louisville, if he's going to Michigan, East Coast, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, Iowa, Florida, you know, if your car will fit in his trailer, that I'll ship that back at no cost and he'll do it for me as well. It's the deal that I've got worked out with him. So I got all these Corvettes sold and some of them have trade-ins, which I'm really excited about getting. So a Corvette's going to fit in that trailer with no problem. So he has his standard operating procedure that I've put him in place. Like, hey, listen, here's what I've told on the car. If you see anything crazy, call me, let me know. We need to hit the brakes right away. So that way everybody's protected on both sides of the deal, the customer and the dealership. So, but that's really a dealership protection. So, if you do have a regional, place, then you can ship that back and forth with no problem. Any more questions over there on that?
It's kind of a roundabout question about shipping, but John asked, is it possible to purchase a vehicle from you and pick it up here in Kentucky, drive it around the mainland, and then have the vehicle shipped from Hawaii or to Hawaii from California?
Oh, yeah. That's not a problem. I did that. I did that with my South Korean customer. So so I sold a Corvette to a South Korean, and he got it here. And he drove it around, you know, all over the place. And then I shipped it to California and then it got shipped from California to South Korea. So yeah, you can do that all the time. I can work out those logistics really, really easy. And most people should, but you got to realize that there's a lot of work when it comes to shipping. There's a lot of BS that comes with shipping. There's a lot of safe falls that you have to have in place. Insurance is the biggest one. People will fake insurance. Yes, transport drivers will fake insurance. You got to be careful. And that's why I say you don't really want to use U-Ship because that's one of the things that can happen. So you really want to make sure that you call the insurance company to verify. And if, say, the driver's not going to get there till 8, 9 o'clock at night, don't be afraid to ask the driver for proof of insurance when you book him and pay him and then call his insurance company and say, hey, listen, he's shipping my car. I need proof of insurance. When you call an insurance company professional and say, hey, listen, I need proof of insurance for his cargo, blah, blah, blah. You know, they'll provide that to you. Email, fax. I think they fax mostly, which is crazy. In 2020, we fax, but they do fax quite a bit. And, so yeah, you definitely want to make sure that they have insurance. That's a big one. It's a really big one.
Okay. What's our next topic?
So taking delivery of your car. We kind of hit that a little bit on there, but you know, shipping, but the other avenue is coming to the dealership, you know?
Fly in,
drive.
Yeah.
Uber, whatever you want to do. Mr. Beast took an Uber all across the country, you know, from North Carolina to LA way back in the day. Wow. So yeah, I think it was like 20. I can't remember how much it was. It was pretty expensive. So, but he just found a random Uber driver and they're like, yeah, let's go. And he drove them all the way to California. It's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So Uber's not out of the realm of doing stuff. So if you have a question on the topic of this topic, I should say, of buying a car from out of state, you can text that into 502-909-5192. This phone number is not for sales questions. This phone is only on during the time of the podcast. We turned it on a little bit beforehand and I had a customer text in and I'm going to respond to him, but I don't know when he texted in. So this phone number is only good for during the podcast. So if you're a customer of mine, don't text this number. Don't call this number. You're not going to reach me. I don't even look at the phone. That's
that is my job.
It's her job. Yep. So that's what she wants to do. And I think we like this format. So we talked on, I did that live broadcast on a Friday night and I think everybody was missing you.
Hey, I got on later.
I know, late. But they're like, oh, I'm glad she's here. Much better with you here. I think we saw those comments.
Life is always better with me.
Yep.
Okay. So you kind of missing a big thing on purchasing a car out of state, and that is plate transfers.
Yeah.
What happens, because there are several states, Kentucky being one of them, the plate stays with the vehicle. So I've seen a question. There was somebody earlier that questioned about, you know, what happens when the plate stays with the vehicle and, you know, how do we handle all that?
Yeah. So like Arizona is one of those states that the plate stays with the vehicle. So in Kentucky, what we do is if you are going to a different state, we take that hard plate off and return it to the state because it's going out of state. And then we'll put a 30-day temporary tag on your car so that way you can drive legally on the roads. And then, like I said earlier, is we use a third-party company that sends all the information to the local DMV, and that allows us to, like our company, we usually get the license plate for the customer. Like whatever state you're in, we get a license plate, we overnight that to you. So it literally keeps you from going to the DMV. So
then why for Indiana do we always have to go?
Well, that's by choice.
Oh, yeah. You choose for us to always have to go to that BMV and suffer.
It's not that hard. You don't even go to the BMV. When's the last time you've been in the BMV?
Probably one of the kids' driver's license.
Exactly. And our youngest one is 19, so probably 3 years ago.
But, you know, I like to blame you for everything.
Yeah, I know. I get that. I'm blamed for everything. Blame for everything in this world. That's just part of it. So some of the questions you want to make sure you ask your dealer when you're buying from out of state, ask them to provide a video of the car. Okay. It doesn't even have to be a good video. It could be just like, you know, that they can't upload it real well or whatever the case may be. You could have them FaceTime you, which you don't get really good video from FaceTime just because you're over cell phone links, cell phone Wi-Fi and stuff like that. Signals. That's what I'm trying to say. But you really want a really, really good video. And if a dealership's making a video, 4 to 6 minutes, 6 minutes plus, 10-minute long video, have them show you the entire car. If you use the terminology, give me a 3-minute walk around, 100% of salespeople in the automotive sector should know what a 3-minute walk around is. A 3-minute walk around is a very common phrase on the car. But most importantly, you want that salesperson to show you any imperfections they see. You got to realize there's not a perfect car in this world that the mass consumers are buying. I'm not talking about a Bentley. I'm not talking about a Rolls Royce. I'm not talking about a Bugatti. I'm talking about Chevys, Hondas, Toyotas, Fords, Kias, all these common cars that most people buy. And I can tell you this, that, you know, we were looking over Stradman's car yesterday. We found 2 paint flaws on that car and I did not see them until it was lifted up in the air. And he's like, okay. And I would be the same way. Okay. It happens. It's a brand new car. It's made by man. There's going to be problems. So there's going to be mistakes, right? But so just ask that person to point out any flaws, and you can give them reassurance. You want to give the salesperson reassurance, right? You want that salesperson to know that you're asking great questions to be reassured that you are taking the time to travel to this other state, drive to this other state. It doesn't even matter if it's a 45-minute drive. It could be a 10-minute drive. You want to reassure that salesperson that, hey, I'm just wanting to know so that way I can make a well-informed decision. If there's problems, if there's flaws, if there's scratches, if there's paint chips, I'm not too worried about minor things. It's the major things that I want to know. So if you see anything at all, curb rash on the wheels, I want to know this from you. Will you please do a video? Will you FaceTime me and show me anything out there? FaceTiming is perfect, right? So I don't FaceTime too much because I have a software that I use, a software that I pay every single month that I can make a really good video on and send it to the customer in a link and they can watch it on the internet. And it's not YouTube, right? So YouTube uploading and rendering and stuff like that, it just takes forever. It literally, I record a video that's 6 minutes long. Within 10 minutes, it's in your text message and you're watching it. It's that quick. So like I just had a customer from Wisconsin. We're in Kentucky, right? We don't have much snow down here. We don't have much road salt. We don't have rusting underneath. Wisconsin, a little bit different story. Us being from up north and having being in the major snow belt, we understand when someone calls me and says, hey, listen, I want to see the underneath of this vehicle. Will you send me pictures? Well, I'm said, sure, no problem. I can send you pictures and I do video. I think video is better than pictures. So I did an 8-minute video on this guy and showed this entire video or entire vehicle to this customer. So that way he knew and he bought the Jeep, right? So he flew down here from Wisconsin and bought the Jeep. So, you know, that was important to that customer to make sure that the underbelly of that car was not rusted out. It had flaws, stuff like that. But that's every person's different where they're coming out at. So that's the type of things that you want to do. You just reassure. I didn't have to ask questions. Why do you, you know, the salesman may be like, well, why do you want stuff from underneath, right? Somebody in Florida, you know, who's down in, you know, a salesman's down in Florida is not going to understand a Wisconsin customer, or Michigan customer asking about rust and stuff. They just don't know, right? So it's good that you're going to get a little maybe pushback from the salesperson, but that's why you need to give them confidence on your decision-making process that it's not to tell the salesperson no. It's to tell them, yes, that you know that you're buying a good car and you're not wasting each other's time. And when you put that to the salesperson, it's like, listen, when I come there, I want to buy a car. I don't want to come there and have you do all this work and then I find mistakes or flaws or stuff like that and I walk out without a car. It's wasting both of our times. When you put that to the salesperson, that's going to give that salesperson confidence out there. 100% of the people in this world are salespeople. You're selling something to them. They're selling something to you. Everybody in this world has got something to sell. If it's love, if it's a valuable product, if it's a tangible product, if it's an intangible product, everybody has something to sell. And that's what you need to do is you got to sell that salesperson on the idea that you're wanting information so that way you can make a good informed decision. Ask for that Carfax auto check, you know, don't be afraid to spend $50 or $100 on Carfax if the dealership uses auto check and do it. Our Corvette that's right up in our garage. We have a dirty auto check. No, take that back. We have a dirty Carfax, but we do not have a dirty auto check. So it's good to check both of those on a long distance car. Again, a minor accident's not that big of a deal. Minor accidents, dents, scratches, you know, stuff like that. Tell me about the flaws. Oh yeah. So make sure they show you all the equipment inside that vehicle in that video. And that if they have to do pictures, they have to do pictures. But not everybody is comfortable on video, right?
I'm getting better.
I know, you're doing awesome.
I mean, yeah. Now I'm getting better at being on video, but it is kind of hard to sit there and be looking at a camera and seeing yourself and not liking what you see.
Yeah, I met this lady back in October. I don't know. I can't remember her name, but she's everybody knows who she is. But I don't, right? So I think she's a fitness guru or something. She was at this conference. I was back in October in LA. And she had a really good analogy for getting comfortable on camera. And I wish I'd have known this. And, you know, just look at it as a camera as one person. Don't look at it as a camera. It's just like you're talking to one person face to face, eye to eye, and that's what you need to focus on. And when you think that way, the camera gets better. Like you and I aren't really just like staring at the camera, right? You know, so we're just talking to each other.
I try not to look at the camera.
So, but down the road, I mean, you look how far I've came from day one to day, you know, today, how I am on camera. I'm completely different on camera than I was 10 years ago. So, but yeah, so not everybody's comfortable on camera. So if they need to send you 100 pictures, let them send you 100 pictures, but just, you know, ask them to help you make a good decision in buying a car.
Okay. Are you ready for some more questions?
Sure.
Because I got lots of them.
Good.
Let's talk about if you're writing a check, do you need to, are you required to show proof of funds?
That's a dealership policy, but I don't think there's many dealerships that would just say, hey, listen, okay, you can write us a personal check and leave, right? So most dealerships are going to take certified funds, wire transfer, stuff like that. So, you know, wire transfers can be tricky from cross coast. So, you know, different, what do they call those?
Banks?
Federal Reserves, the federal, because they have to go through Federal Reserves, you know? So it's important to, that it could take some time. A California bank could take, you know, 6 hours for that money to get in. If you're in the same reserve or just one away, that money comes back real quick. And, you know, like quick pay, like Zella and stuff like that. Sometimes I think they have a limit, I think. So you got to worry about that as well. So, if you're writing a check, do certified funds, wire transfer, whatever the case may be.
Okay, I got a two-parter here. I just bought a Cadillac from Ohio. I live in Indiana. Is it normal for the Cadillac dealership to send me a check for the taxes?
It could be, yeah. So that's it just depends on the dealership's policy. So they did their due diligence and they collected this in Indiana sales tax, and they may just be like done with it at that point. So again, every dealership's different. So my dealership, we go the extra length. And that comes a lot from our comptroller. Our comptroller is very A-type personality, and she is very controlling, and she is very awesome. She runs our business very, very well. She protects Mr. Bachman, Mrs. Bachman extremely well. She's been there from day one. She's been with our company, we've been in business for 38 years. She's been there before we sold a car. She's the one who set this company up. So extremely smart lady. So she's got her standard operating procedures in place, and we go by them. And she's not like some wicked lady that nobody likes. We love her to death. So hard to deal with sometimes because of the way she does things. But that's her job. She's the accountant of the company. So it's a dealership policy. If they wrote you a check, they probably made that out to the Indiana DMV or whatever. I hope they wouldn't make it out to you personally, but so yeah, it's just dependent on the dealership's personal policy or what they do, but you should just be able to go over and do it and not have an issue.
And then part two of that is I have disability plates here in Indiana. Can I park in a handicap spot with our new paper plates from an Ohio dealership?
So what I would do is keep your disability plate and display it either in the back window or the front window. So that way you're protected. I would assume if you get a ticket, because I've never had this situation. I don't have a disability plate or anything like that. I would assume that if you get some sort of ticket and you can prove that you are disabled and you're not just taking up a handicap spot because you're lazy and you're rude and inconsiderate, that the court would just throw that out. Yes, it's kind of maybe an issue, but I think commonly, not very many police officers ticket things. I know the ADA is real big on this stuff, but you got to realize that majority of handicap spots are on private property, and police officers do not go on private property to ticket. So like, unfortunately we're landlocked and we do use a couple of handicap spots just to park cars in at the dealership. And since 2012, and nobody's ever going to get a ticket there. So, but we're pretty conscientious of and try to keep them free. It's usually like on a busy Saturday or something like that.
Okay. Next question. How does the process work if I'm buying a used car from your dealership? So basically, it's the same as a new car.
Yeah, same as the new car. She said, I love it that you know this. So same as the new car, but you don't have to worry about regional pricing, as I spoke at the beginning of the podcast. So there's no regional pricing on used cars. I was referring to all that as far as new cars, and I think everybody got that. But yeah, so it's just the same. My dealership, we price everything dead on. We price everything effectively to make sure that you get the best pricing. So yeah, it's all the same throughout the industry.
And we've had the question of somebody's moving from California to Nevada, which would be the better place to buy a truck?
That's a good one, because I would assume you're going to Nevada's a tough state. I got a lot of Nevada customers, and I know what a lot of the Nevada dealers do, preferably down in Reno and Vegas. And I know how California dealers are. It's kind of funny. Those are two tricky states, because dealers there are like what we would call high gross dealers. They'll start you at MSRP, start with addendums. They start with dealer markups and, you know, BS fees and stuff like that. So, you just got to work it, you know, maybe work the dealer in Nevada and talk to them, and work the dealer in California and talk to them and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm getting ready to leave to Nevada, so this is your one shot to sell me a car. And work the dealership in Nevada and saying, hey, listen, I'm getting ready to move there, and if you wanted me to be loyal and earn my business, you got your shot. I'm going to buy it from my local dealer, my loyal dealer in California. So you can kind of work that angle both ways.
That's and of course, remember, you're going to pay sales tax in whichever state you title your vehicle in.
Yes, correct. So if you do not have a Nevada driver's license, you're probably going to pay California tax. But if you can get that stuff done really quick and you have your address in Nevada, say, okay, well, I'll title it in Nevada and I'll get my driver's license done when I get there, and you should be fine. So every state's different, and but you have to be leery and cognizance, did I say that right? Cognizance?
That doesn't even sound right.
I don't know what the hell I'm saying, but
there's that word again.
I know. You just got to be, you know, conscientious of what could happen. You know, it's confusing. It's really confusing when people are moving. It's really hard for me to sell a car and do things right. There's always something, seems like there's a screw up, and we have to do extra work as a dealership when people are moving from one state to another state.
Okay. And then somebody asked about the benefits of buying from you, or essentially buying from another state. They put it as buying from you, but what would be the benefit of actually buying from another state when looking at cars?
Yeah, I actually get that question a lot, and I was not going to bring that up, right? As I say in this, at the beginning of this podcast, These podcasts are not for me to sell more cars. These podcasts are help you to buy cars from your local dealer, from a dealer of your choice, and not to call me to buy a car. So that's not what this podcast is intended to do. So, but that is a question that I get quite a bit from people that are calling in. Why should I buy from you? That's kind of like the way I look at it is they ask that question exactly that way, is what you read it. But the way I look at it is, why should I buy from you? And I say the same thing almost every single time. Buy from me because you want to support what I do as a YouTuber, as someone who is an advocate to help you buy a car. You want to know that you're going to get the best experience out there, and that you know that after the fact that you're going to be taken care of regardless of what comes up. Those are the reasons why you would buy from me. But again, not on here to pitch me. This is kind of a pitch-free zone.
And when it comes to new cars, pretty much, I mean, outside of the Corvette and maybe the Camaro, you know, some of those new cars are not going to be any cheaper coming from you versus buying it at your own local dealership.
Yeah, you're dead on. Thank you. You reminded me dead on. If you're trying to buy a Chevy Sonic or a Cruze or the new Trailblazer coming out, don't even call me if you're in California, right? Because are you really going to buy the car from me and then pay $2,000 extra in shipping? I mean, if you want to, sweet. I'll be more than happy to sell you a car, but let's look at logistics. Let's look at logic, that you're not going to buy a random car and ship it across country. If you want to fly in and drive it back, perfect. I've sold many Silverados to people in California, and I use California a lot because I have a lot of California clients. But when it comes to Corvettes and even Camaros now, I mean, unless I've got the Camaro in stock and you want to buy it, sweet. Unless you want me to order it, sweet. Let's work together. But right now, a 2020 Corvette, yeah, I'm the perfect person to buy one from, because you're going to pay MSRP. You're not going to get any BS stuff. You're not going to have, you know, lies about anything. You're not, you're going to be informed 100% of the way through. But really, like, that's really the only reason to call me to buy a car is because you want to buy something for me. So big shout out to Austin. He's been, looks like he's the loyal Chevy guy, Chevy dude, from, he's driving a 16 Cruise. Is that what he says?
Oh, Sonic.
Sonic. Oh,
can
Sonic.
Can you not read?
I can't read.
I mean, geez.
I don't know what's going on.
It says, love watching you, Chevy dude. You're the man. I have been a Chevy guy since 2017. I drive a 2016 Chevy Sonic LTZ sedan. See, I can read.
Yeah, you know what it is though with me, right? I haven't been sleeping.
Let's, you know, try to find the other excuses.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we had a couple fun questions that I'm going to throw in here. But somebody wanted to know where you got your Under Armour jacket you're wearing.
I get to ask that all the time. I get it from our dealership. So we have a supplier that gets them and they make them for me. Nobody else in the dealership has got this logo. It's all the Chevy logo. And, I mean, I can get them. I've thought about putting them on our website, but they're like $60. So, I mean, I can get them and supply them. I got a red one, black one, blue one. I wear the blue one more often. But yesterday during, Stradman's PDI, I laid down on our service floor, and the guys on the camera can see I got all this white right here, and I got grease all over it. So I'm not wearing the blue one today.
Okay.
You're gonna have to do some laundry for me.
Yeah, I need to check on how to do that. Here's the other fun question. In a race between me and you, me and the C7, you and your C8, who's gonna win?
Oh, C8 all day long. So if you go backwards, Camaro versus Corvette with me and my daughter. So she's 17 at the time or 16? We talked about 17. That today. She was 17 at the
almost
time.
Almost 18.
16, she learned how to do burnouts. 17, she was drag racing, right? So I couldn't win against her because I was in a manual transmission car and the Camaro had an 8-speed automatic, and you cannot beat that automatic. You cannot beat it by shifting gears. With this new DCT, you have no chance. You have no chance. I give you half a car length and you probably couldn't beat me still. Full car length.
I hate to admit it, but I couldn't even beat you in the Tesla.
No, not that Tesla.
It, you know, we race the Tesla and the C7 up and off, up and on ramp one morning.
No, we did not.
Hey, I didn't say where.
We have any on-topic questions?
We were in Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get back to the on-topic questions. There was one... first time car buyer with no credit, used or new car better?
It depends on what you want your monthly payment. So new car, you're going to have a higher payment. You're going to have less worries. You're going to have full warranty. Used car, maybe have a little bit of risk on buying a used car, but much lower payment. On a used car, you're definitely going to need money down. On a new car, maybe you can skate by with no money down. So it just depends on what you want to do. With that. So you just need to look at both ways. Used cars, typically, they're sold at retail and they book and banks look at loan to value for that based off of wholesale value. So you're already going to have, over book value because of that. On new cars, they may look at invoice, but they calculate rebates as cash down. So you're going to be in book value, a better book value, loan to value, on a new car, but you just have the pros and cons of higher payment, lower payment.
Okay.
We can talk about this out of country. We'll do this one last question. Oh, yes. for the audio portion of the podcast.
Afterwards
for the people listening on the audio portion, we're live every Tuesday, 7 PM Eastern time on the Chevy Dude YouTube channel. And then Wednesday morning at 6 AM, we are, going to push the audio out for everyone to listen to. And we're on all the platforms. I know we're currently on 3 or 4, but look it up, Beyond the Showroom, on your favorite podcast platform. So out of the country, somebody mentioned Hawaii. Hawaii might as well say out of the country, but there's not the logistics of getting it out of the country. So
let's talk like Canada, yeah. Buyers. I did see a question earlier regarding, you know, Canada buyers, which you did have a Canada buyer.
No, I haven't. So, no, just joking. But, yeah, so they bought that used car. And basically, what that does is, there's logistics of exporting and importing a car. So many times, cause I've done it more in Canada than I have anywhere, any other country. I've shipped cars, obviously, I mentioned South Korea earlier. I've shipped cars to England, Australia, Italy, South America, no Africa, no China. I've never shipped anything over there. That's cool. So basically, you need to get the title to the border, usually within 3 days, three full days before they go over. And with Canada, you have to pay your tax right when you cross the border, your duty or whatever it is. You have to pay that tax, and it's expensive. I can't remember how much it is, but it's not cheap by any means. And so it's just logistics of doing it. And then, of course, shipping the car, if it's going overseas, boat's going to be the cheapest. You can certainly do airline's going to be extremely expensive. I have shipped cars on airplanes before, but it's extremely expensive. But boats, you know, you could take 2 to 3 weeks for that car to get from the port and out, and never, ever, ever, ever put personal items inside the car. You'll never get them. They will be gone. The car's always unlocked. There's people who sneak into the ports. They sleep in your car, all that stuff. So, with that being said, I think we're going to be done with the audio portion of the podcast. So again, for the audio people, thanks for joining every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time on the Chevy Dude YouTube channel, Wednesday morning, 6 a.m. audio portion, and beyondtheshowroom.com is where you can go to, beyondtheshowroompodcast.com is where you can go.
Yeah, don't be saying the wrong website.
Yeah. So beyondtheshowroompodcast.com is where you can go and find out all the links on the podcast. So if you didn't get to watch this whole thing, or if you're just joining in on the video portion, that's where you can go to get all that information. So as always, thanks again for watching. Support the channel at chevydudestore.com. Use the link for the Amazon link. Use the link for Amazon. I cannot talk.
You really are having problems tonight.
This is horrible. It's kind of prudent to be able to talk when you're doing audio portion. Use the link to the Amazon. See, I can't do it. Use the Amazon link in the description below to support the channel as well. It's free, and we get like 2 cents for every item you purchase. So as always, guys, thanks again for listening. Have a great day and drive safely.
Beyond the Showroom is on the socials. Follow along on Twitter at ChevyDude. Join the Beyond the Showroom Facebook group by searching Beyond the Showroom. Subscribe to the Chevy Dude YouTube channel. And until next time, have a great day and drive safely.